DJ International Celebrity 2000. And with me in the studio tonight are our perennial co-host, Luke.
Good evening.
And we have a very, very special guest tonight. With me tonight is Shota.
Konbanwa.
Good
evening.
And he's visiting us from Tokyo. Shota is the host of our sister program, Sex Talk Japan, which is the most popular radio program in Japan. and
everybody knows that.
And he's come to join us tonight to talk about his experiences in Japan. And
I have to report to my boss.
So thank you all for listening. But I just want to start out the program as usual. Tonight's theme is going to be Ask the Hosts Anything. That's going to be one of our themes for tonight.
We have a fabulous team here of amateur anthropologists, bon vivants, perverts, then queers, and computer programmers here to answer all your sexual questions.
I think I'm all of those except for bon vivant, whatever that is.
What is the bon
vivant? Playboys.
Uh-huh. Oh. All right. So I just wanted to start by giving out the WRCT phone numbers. They are 621-9728. And if you're calling from Japan, if you're listening to us from overseas, country code 1, area code 412-621-9728.
Use KDD, please.
KDD?
KDD. It's one of the very good international phone company in Japan.
Really?
Ah.
What is that?
That's the sort of details we need to know.
I thought there was only one, the NTT or whatever, Nippon.
There's a big difference between the United States and Japan. And in United States, there's the ATT separated to the Sprint, Bell Atlantic or something. But Japan is inside of Japan only NTT. The outside to go to Japan to somewhere in another country, you use KDD.
Okay.
But maybe this year, 2000, there's a big change. I hope so. Separate and compete.
What does KDD stand for?
It's a Japanese word.
Oh.
Kokusai Denshin Denwa. Anyway, K means international.
Oh, okay.
D and Denwa, telephone. Mm-hmm. D is also kind of the communication words.
So that is not. I thought that was the Japanese word for sex. I thought.
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay.
Before we begin probing into the intimate heart of Japan, I have a question for you, DJ International Celebrity 2000. You've been a noted fount of homosexuality, so much so that it exudes from your pores and has to be sponged up after you proceed. Preferably
by the swim team, yes, that's true.
Have you ever had sex with a woman?
No, I have not. I actually have not. I actually came close a couple of times. Well, not even close. No, that's not true.
How close have you come?
So let's see. This is a very personal and difficult question. I think I was sort of a sexual late bloomer anyway, and so by the time I entered college, and I entered college late, I entered college at the age of 21. I hadn't really had any sexual experience to speak of, except for one sort of set of experiences when I was 15. But there was really a long period of time between my first sexual experience and my second.
Had you been masturbating or just
I've been
not interested?
No, I've been masturbating pretty much continuously, but
with occasional breaks to sleep and so forth.
That's right. And I had my first sort of set of sexual encounters was with a friend of mine, a male friend, when I was 15, and we had some kind of, you can hardly call it a relationship when you're 15, right? It's just sort of fooling around or whatever, and it was okay, it was nice or whatever, but And I actually spent a long time kind of waiting for that to happen again in this kind of passive way. You know, I was just hoping that some other friend would sort of suggest, you know, that we have a little sleepover or whatever again. And in fact, you know, my second bona fide sexual encounter occurred at age 25, which was a whole, you know, literally a decade later in your primitive Earth calendar. And so,
what do you use for that?
I'm sorry,
masturbation.
What do I use? Well, you know, there's all kinds of things that I mean, you know, I've had a lot of practice with masturbation. Although I think, you know, for example, we were talking in previous shows, I have these electric sex toys that I bought from the web, which actually run, you know, an alternating current through your genitals and give you a little pulsing shock.
How have those been doing for you lately?
Well, I actually used them last night. And, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about the Blowfish because they're a fabulous company. The Blowfish company is where I ordered these things, and there's all kinds of great stuff on there. And they recommended these things very highly, and I think they're very interesting, but they're not really quite the totally satisfying sex toy that I had hoped that they would be. Because
a pity.
All they do generally is they're stimulating and arousing, I think they're excellent foreplay toys, because what they do is they get me worked up into such a frenzy that I have to, like, grab my partner and force him to, like, you know,
I would rather
service me. Exactly, because they get me worked up into a powerful state of arousal.
So presumably you detach the electrodes before you have them.
Yeah. Well, I do, although I've actually been tempted to attach, you know, the anode to him and the cathode to me and have, you know, complete the circuit.
I was curious about that. Yes.
But he's a little bit shy. I mean, the thing about these electric toys is that they're a mixture. The sensations they provide are a mixture of pain and pleasure, right? And so
I sometimes had a similar thought of the using the electric pad for the violet wand whilst performing oral sex.
Yes, oh, that would be fantastic, I think. The violet wand, for those listeners, can you explain the violet wand for those listeners?
The violet wand, unlike the electric toys that DJ 2000 has been talking about, generates static electricity. So the wherever you take it, you can cast sparks, and it comes with a pad that such that if you make good skin contact with the pad and yourself, you can cast sparks from your fingertips wherever you touch your partner. This has a world of sexual possibilities. Yeah.
So I believe, so we've experimented with this thing where you had the connector in your pocket or something, or attached to your skin, and you had sparks jumping from your fingers.
Yes, in my pants, so that it made good skin contact. If it was just in my pocket, it would be painfully shocking me.
I think the problem with that in oral sex is that you lose all interest. I mean, it becomes uninteresting. That device becomes uninteresting once you make contact, right? If you were like licking your partner's vagina or whatever, it's only when your tongue is sort of close to the genitalia and the spark leaps from you to her that it's interesting. Is that right? I mean, once you're actually in contact, you don't really feel anything anymore.
Well, it depends on the strength of the contact. When you have just delicate contact, such as a lick, then you can feel the energy flowing. I also wonder that for fellatio, typically I like my penis to be enclosed, and that I think would be enough contact that it would not have much of an effect. But still, I think it has some interesting possibilities.
So now, the sensations that you would get from these other kinds of the muscular stimulating device is a lot different. I'm actually a little bit nervous about it because
it seems like it might do unusual things to the muscles of the mouth. And
itself would be okay. I'm actually sort of, the thing I'm worried about is that, you know, the number one rule about these things is not to let the current pass through your heart. So you know, I'm not sure where to attach it, the electrode, so that.
Well, and it seems like passing the energy through the brain is probably not the best idea either.
Well, who knows? I mean, it might actually, you know, it'd be like your own sort of homemade form of electroshock therapy, right?
There's a very interesting advertisement for that on the magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
You're talking about this electrical muscular stimulator?
Yes, there's a many, maybe a very famous girl's name or something. Very famous girl's name. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that this is actually toy's name is name of the explorer. Explorer for the pole. Pole is the end of the Earth, yes. End of the North and West. Do you understand? How should I say? Earth and
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The North Pole.
Who is the explorer?
The explorer to those area. Yeah. After baby, they have to stay there about long time without yes. girl, and they have to
so they're alone
bring
in the
some toys, special toys.
Oh. Are you serious?
Yes.
And so what? And
this toy, the shape is like a fish, but this fish opening mouth.
Oh, no way.
This reminds me of a question about Japanese sexual practice that crossed my mind. I have read that in Japan it is illegal to make sex toys in the shape of human genitals. And so Japanese vibrators mm-hmm. get made in the shape of like dolphins with or rabbits with the little bunny rabbit on the top to provide clitoral stimulation. Can you confirm that this law?
I don't know for sure because in Japan there is not such kind of law. This, mm-hmm. There is a very famous store about this kind of store. This is some famous. This owner is a graduate of the very famous university, like CMU
yes.
from the ECE. His toy is a wireless.
Wireless
control.
In Japan, this yes. person. Interesting. So.
And this toy is for the use for the girl.
Yes, I've often been fascinated by
the customers control the wires, remote wires machine. The food guards installed this kind of the
that's fantastic. Toys. You could have an internet or a web interface to the same thing, right? I mean,
the world of teledildonics is almost upon us.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I've often been fascinated by the possibilities that a remote controlled vibrator would seem to offer, but.
And I just want to amplify, not to change that, I want to amplify the previous comment. I think lesbians mm-hmm. Buy that mm-hmm. kind of vibrator too, you know, so that they don't want to buy something that looks like a penis. After all, they have rejected the penis and all of its ramifications.
It certainly depends on the lesbian, but that certainly was part of lesbian political thought for quite some time. Another question about Japanese sexual practice. In my perusal of Japanese pornography, including Japanese pornographic comic books, it seems like never ever is there shown pubic hair or genitals.
Yes, it's wrong.
But it's against the law to show pubic hair.
What is it? There is a gradually change.
Mm-hmm.
Even maybe it is maybe about these 5 years, it's available to it's a hair.
Yes.
It's okay.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
But open, it's not. It's no good.
So I was in Japan too, and I saw this. I saw an issue of Playboy magazine, which was very strange because. Either that it was airbrushed, or the women were sort of perfectly smooth in their and hairless in their crotch area in this kind of strange. I don't think they're. I mean, it was just kind of this. I don't even think they really showed any detail of the vagina either. It was just kind of this kind
of. Yes, that's
only photograph, and the government decides that photograph is one of the art, but video is no way.
So video is not an art, but no. Photography is. So then what about like drawing? Are you allowed to draw pictures of the
draw picture? It's a complete art. Mm-hmm. Everything okay.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But maybe if there is some very famous artist, naked woman was there,
yeah.
And there is some TV companies watch this picture, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe this have just only face or not this about this area.
Yes.
Just to remind our listeners, with your questions or comments, our listeners here or in Japan, please call us, country code 1, area code 412-268-WRCT. That's 268-9728. And be sure to use KDD, is that right?
Yes.
The international telephone system. So if you had a question, please ask it. Otherwise, I was going to continue telling the painful story of my own sexual awakening.
I was going to ask you to please tell us it. So when we last left right here, you were 25.
Well, it's I was jumping ahead. I both entered and left college without having a satisfying or having any kind of sexual experience. Actually, my first real sexual experience was after college. And so even though I went to college when most people are doing most of their sexual experimentation, I still failed to actually get laid in any noticeable way. And so but it was in college that I actually it was interesting. I made a couple of really close friends with a couple of women, and I started to have strong feelings for them, and I thought, this must be what it feels like when you start liking a girl.
Yeah.
But it was very confusing because they wanted to have some kind of romantic encounter, and I tried sort of kissing them and doing the kind of makeout thing, but I just didn't feel it. I felt nothing. I was passionless and empty inside, and so and it was, it's confusing because having had so little sexual contact of any kind, I didn't really know what to expect. So
yes.
Some of this is sort of learned anyway, and so I was like,
yes, I certainly was naive and pretty much clueless the first time I had sex.
Right, and this wasn't even really sex. This was just like petting and kissing. But
I was clueless then too.
But I certainly didn't sort of feel excited about it, and it was nothing I really wanted to continue doing. And so, but again, I was telling myself, well, maybe this is the wrong person, or maybe this takes practice, or maybe you have to learn to like this kind of thing. But ultimately, it became clear to me that it was the gender thing.
Yes.
And I eventually sort of decided that I was fully homosexual at some point. But still, even having come to that realization, I wasn't actually didn't really have much experience or really any experience. I mean, I sort of got crushes on a lot of different people, but it never really worked out. Like the model that worked so well when I was 15, which was one of your good friends sort of, you get closer and closer and just naturally segue into a sexual relationship. That wasn't really happening. I mean, I actually got into several extremely close, very affectionate relationships with some of my male friends in college. I'm doing things that normal males wouldn't do. We'd hold. Right. Well, no. I mean, we'd hold. We'd hold hands while we talked, or some of them would spend the night in my bed and stuff. I mean, sort of quasi, or fairly intimate things, but not actually sort of actual genital things, like no kissing or no sex or anything like that. But a lot of
kissing is a genital thing.
A lot of well, you know,
big difference.
Maybe I'm not doing it right.
Whatever. But yeah, but I'm drawing some kind of distinction. I mean, there's lots of affection, far more so than sort of between sort of traditional American males. But no actual intercourse. And some of that, I think, is just sort of reasonable. I mean, I think, you know, college is actually an especially lonely time for a lot of people, and there's a shortage of actual human contact, and I think people need hugs. People need, you know, to get affection, and so I think it's actually, you know, it wasn't that these guys were all secretly homosexual. It was just that I think they appreciated the affection of someone who cared about them.
So, do you have the friend who is homosexual?
Do what?
Yeah. It means in Japan, homosexual gay is not so popular. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit difficult to coming out in Japan. It means maybe among my friend there is maybe some people the homosexual guy. Homosexual, I think, but actually nobody tells me I'm gay. But how about you?
Well, since DJ 2000 is out about being gay, that probably affects his experience substantially.
Right. So you know, that's right. So I think. I mean, if. Yes and no, actually. I thought that there were gay people all around me, and the reason that I didn't know who they were was because, you know, they didn't know that I was gay, and so they weren't telling me. And so I adopted the strategy when I came to Carnegie Mellon that everyone must know, and that way, you know, I would become sort of a universal sink for this information.
The icon of the gay community.
Exactly.
That you now are.
and you know, I guess it's worked to some degree. I mean, I think most people sort of know, you know, anyone who cares about my sexual orientation probably knows. But I think to my disappointment, there are more heterosexuals than I suspected. Like, there are more people who are actually
darn those pesky heterosexuals.
Just heterosexual. And it's really, you know, I've made it perfectly clear that I'm very accepting of their homosexuality if they should just choose to reveal it. But as it turns out,
so how many members of the swim team are there who you would choose to accept their homosexuality?
I am like so over the swim team. The swim team at this school has such an attitude. I mean, you know, I've moved on. Sorry, you know, they're just not appealing at all.
Who have you moved on to?
Actually, I don't know. My current sexual fetishes are sort of on a. I'm not really fetishizing any particular varsity sport at the moment. I'm sort of got free floating fetishes at this point. So can't help you out there.
So when you say free floating fetishes, then just like. What are we talking about here?
Well, I think at some point I guess when I was younger and in college, I was just sort of completely boy crazy, and you know, everybody was just like every attractive young man was sort of fascinating to me, and I followed them around and stalked them like a you know, stalked them like a lunatic. But I don't know. Now that I'm old and bitter, it takes more than an elfish appearance and a perky swim team bubble butt to get my attention. You know, I require my men to have sensitivity and intellect,
as well as a perky bubble butt.
That's not. It's not totally true. I mean, I think for there's a lot of gay men, you know, myself included, for whom, you know, who still melt. You know, there's some sort of genetic encoding that we have that when some tragically pouty little 18-year-old sort of, you know, with the right kind of... I don't know. I'm not having a hard time putting this in words, but there's still a certain kind of like young, you know, the young college student, sort of right on the cusp between boy and man. That I think that there's something appealing to that type of person, no matter sort of how old you get. I mean, even though I think it's very unlikely that I could actually have a satisfying relationship with an 18-year-old.
I certainly was on the receiving end of some of that attention once or twice.
Really?
Yes. Have I told you this story? So I was in San Francisco, noted den of perversity, of course, and I was going to a play party in San Francisco with some friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And I come to this play party, and
this is a BDSM play party.
Yes.
How about the rainbow flag?
It may have, I don't recall, but certainly there was a large overlap in that community between the people who were into BDSM and the people who were the gay, lesbian, or bisexual. So I would expect to see that plenty of the same-sex fun at any play party. But this was a play party with people that, by and large, I didn't know, and a place that I hadn't been to. And I walked in, and they started introducing myself to people. And I met this guy, I believe his name was Eric. He had long, curly hair. And he looked at me and just dropped to his knees, his jaw agape. And the guy he was with leaned over and explained to me, "Eric would just love to suck your cock."
Are you serious?
I am not making this up.
That is so rude.
I was admittedly taken aback, and I did not take him up on the offer.
So what are the circumstances? This is like at someone's house, or this is some kind of warehouse, or what's the...
This is a large house devoted to the sex play, so that and BDSM. So inside it was partitioned off into the little room. So there was, for example, the medical area, the torture chamber, the St. Andrew's cross, and so forth.
Okay.
It was solely for the purpose of play parties.
The medical area. Well,
lots of people enjoy the medical fantasies in their BDSM.
Really?
Yes.
Let's just push that on the stack for just a moment. So, I mean, this actually sounds like this. I mean, that this gentleman has some kind of communication disorder. I mean, couldn't he have... I mean, normally at a party, when you want to suck someone's penis, and believe me, I've had that feeling, I mean, you're a little bit more coy about it. You're sort of like, you know, "Hi, you know, have we met?" Or, you know, there's some kind of, you know, you offer them a cheese doodle or something, or you make small talk or whatever, right? I mean, you don't just immediately go to the, you know, drop to the floor and... flop your mouth open, although I guess there's a refreshing kind of directness to that approach as well.
I was flattered, certainly, taken aback, but also flattered. And the setting of the party was certainly a setting of sexual possibilities, and in general, people weren't afraid of those sexual possibilities. So, I was certainly surprised, but it wasn't totally unreasonable for that situation.
Now, what about your own kind of psychosexual makeup? Were you identifiably bisexual at that point, or?
At that time, I was calling myself bisexual, pretty much.
Why are you calling bisexual?
Partly I was calling myself bisexual because, in that community, it was kind of the quote-unquote cool thing to do to be bisexual. That kind of the assumption that was that everyone was a bisexual switch. And it wasn't until later that I concluded that really that I tended to fantasize about women much more than about men. I guess I was really a heterosexual after I hadn't really found the right man. I guess I was really a heterosexual after all. And it was only after then that I found a right man.
What?
You're giving me the most amazing look.
Sorry, I'm confused. I was immersing myself completely in your story, and
so at that time I was identifying as bisexual.
But what man? You've never had a relationship with a man.
Not necessarily a relationship, but I've certainly received fellatio from men, and I have very sweet memories of a man named Troy in San Francisco.
Roy? Troy?
Roy.
Roy, if you're listening, please
call.
Exactly. Please call in. KDD. So, wow, fantastic.
So where were we?
Oh, I don't know. The, what were we talking about, me?
We were talking about the guy dropping to his knees, offering me mayoral sex. We were talking about the medical BDSM scenes.
Right. I just wanted to make this comment that I think, there's something sort of, how should I put this? There have been times when I've been offered sex in a very direct way, you know, by someone like sporting an erection in the showers, for example, or you know, whatever. And I actually find that not that I'm repelled by that, but I find it sort of, it's not very appealing. The sight of somebody just like with their jaw popped open and their like tongue sticking out is actually, I mean, it makes the notion of their anatomy all too apparent. I mean, somehow it's just like too vivid a depiction of us as, you know, living meaty organisms. I mean, I would much rather be seduced by someone's kind of sense of humor or wry commentary or cute smile or something like that, rather than seeing, you know, their mouth open or their like butt cheeks spread or whatever, you know.
Well, I can see your point, certainly, but and it's true that the when he his jaw dropped in wonder, it left me feeling more nonplussed than attracted, and I was kind of disconcerted. But on the other hand, it's kind of a fabulous feeling to be able to inspire such a reaction.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it does. One imagines that the beautiful people of the world, the movie stars and supermodels and so on, have this power where they can just just be like, you know, it is time for you to service me. So indeed.
Yes, I'm not sure I would want to use that power, but it'd be nice to have it.
So you also touched on something I thought interesting, which was this notion of medical experimentation.
or medical scenes, yes. Many people have such fantasies. If you want to be psychoanalytical, you could explain it as that the doctor or nurse has some degree of power over you that you're in a sense helpless in their hands. But therapy, if you want to just look for fun things, some people enjoy enemas, and a mock doctor's office can be a good way to do that.
But
and there's medical bondage, like straitjackets and so forth.
I mean, is there any like legitimate medical reason for anyone to give an enema, or is it always for a pretext for some kind of perverse sexual play?
There have been people who have claimed the medical benefits from a high colonic. I don't know whether those are true or not. So.
Right. So
I have a question.
Yes.
And you said the homosexual and gay is a difference?
No, those are the same.
But in Japan, homosexual and gay is a difference words.
What is the difference?
It's a homosexual is a person who wearing the kind of like girls wear, speaking like not use a girls words, but gay is a looks and speaking is everything the same as a normal human, but only sex to only against man.
Well, that's interesting. So what would it be the American equivalent of that usage of homosexual?
Right. I think the top level we call the Okama. Okama means a big, very big ball. These guys totally change the body from woman to man, cut the panties, and painting the face, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a three level kind of the homosexual people.
So that top level would be a transvestite, someone dressing completely as
and
woman.
Operating the body.
And that middle level would be what we might call Nelly, perhaps. I'm not familiar with all the slang. Someone who seems effeminate,
yes.
But how interesting.
That's fascinating. And then the bottom level is someone who's still, like myself, outwardly extremely masculine and powerfully, you know, powerfully attracted to all both men and women, but who in his sex life has sex with men only. That's fascinating. I just had a thought just to divert this for a second on the medical fantasies that you were talking about. I mean, does anybody have kind of a... I mean, I think that because I'm so interested in bondage and submission that I would enjoy sort of a, you know, an HMO fantasy, kind of going to my gateway doctor and getting treatment denied, right, and being forced to resubmit my claim, right? I mean, I think that would be...
Getting your paperwork shuffled from place to place.
Yes, exactly.
Just today, in conversation with someone, a friend of mine speculated that, you know, maybe long, tedious lunch meetings could play a part in his BDSM fantasy life.
Wow. Well, I mean, certainly there are people who like to be tied up and then left alone for hours, you know, or left in a little cage or whatever, just with just a bowl of water and a chew toy or whatever.
Yes.
That sounds like that's sort of similar.
I could imagine, although the other things a doctor gets to do are things like the injections and the drawing blood and the deep investigations of things like most men would not let anyone but a doctor examine their prostate. And so that gives that doctor role a certain right to invade the patient's body that I could imagine being hot, though it's not personally hot for me.
Right. Yeah. I can sort of see what you mean. The invading the body plus the whole kind of authority.
Yes. Yes. That like
gig.
For this person, you will cough when they ask.
So. Anyway.
It's a grown up, kinky way of playing doctor.
Yeah, I still though. What's so far, I find remarkable at all about all these scenes is how people divert attention away from the genitalia. I mean, I get so impatient when I'm having sex that I want to hasten the orgasm as sort of quickly as possible.
Well, so when I'm masturbating, I masturbate in one of two ways. There's the quick direct-to-orgasm approach, which I've perfected with long practice. But sometimes I'll then take a stack of pornographic books and a bottle of oil and just keep myself aroused and lazily stroking myself for hours at a time.
Do you mean literally hours? Like literally hours?
I know that I've done it for 4 hours at a time. And when I finally do orgasm, it's amazing, much more intense than my normal quick orgasms.
Right.
In Japanese, I would like to...
Go ahead.
It writes a story about a video, adult video.
Yes.
And that first form video is made by Sony.
Yes.
The Sony is Beta. Do you remember Beta?
I remember Betamax.
Yeah, that's Beta. It's the first Sony designed Beta. And Sony tried to get the whole market and introduce this technology to here, their competitor, like Victor, Matsushita. And after that, Victor, Matsushita made the VHS.
Yes.
And there is a hard competition between Beta and VHS. And that's what, you know, VHS win. The reason is VHS adult video is better than the Beta one.
Well, how interesting.
Really? So why was adult video more popular in VHS than on Beta? Did Sony not?
It depends on the shop. Maybe salesman of the company. It means the starting point of the introduce the home video. It in Japan we have a video at home. It means we have a adult video at home. Mm. In that case, it's in Japan there is a adult thing is a very prohibit very strongly. We have no chance to meet the kind of the adult movie.
I think our producer has a comment.
Can I interject for a second to talk about VHS versus Beta?
Sure.
The real reason why VHS took off as a format is that Sony kept Beta proprietary, whereas VHS format was allowed to be manufactured by anyone, which dramatically decreased the price of the VHS players.
What?
And allowed the technology to triumph in the market, which then fed into a cycle of making VHS tapes increasingly popular. It's sort of the same thing that happened between PC clones and Apples in the computer arena.
So that's what I sort of suspected, but was this also fueled by, you know, the porn purveyors making cheap VHS tapes, or what, was there any kind of porn connection at all?
I don't know, but pornography provided most of the early impetus for video cassette recorder sales.
Yes, the pornography was a powerful driver for the video market because it allowed people to watch porn in the privacy of their own homes instead of having to go to a X-rated movie theater.
All right, so that seems very sensible. So the question I have is, why have we not learned this lesson in the emerging new media? Like, for example, I have a DVD player and they're fabulous, mm-hmm. and yet the porn supply on DVD is pretty limited, and it's certainly true that the touted advantages of DVD, such as such as the multiple angle thing, where you can watch the same scene from different camera angles, or the
that could be well suited to porn.
Yeah, exactly. And so you would think that if porn is such an enabling sort of technology, jump in, producer.
Actually, The Economist, my favorite magazine, just had a big article on how DVD had actually resurrected the porn industry from the brink of bankruptcy, and that it was in fact these multiple view angle discs that had generated most of the enthusiasm for the new format.
Now, I had not realized that the porn industry was on the brink of bankruptcy. Can you tell us more about that?
Sorry, not on the brink of bankruptcy, but it increased their revenues by 40% in the span of
You're talking about the porn industry or the DVD industry? Because the DVD was sort of touchy, too, for a while.
No, I'm talking about, specific pornography film production companies. The DVDs really have dramatically increased their sales. Saving from the brink of bankruptcy is perhaps a bit of an exaggeration. Porn companies are unlikely to ever go completely bankrupt, right? Mm-hmm. But it has had a dramatic effect.
So maybe I'm just crippled by my unique point of view. I haven't seen significant sort of gay DVDs, but maybe there's a lot of straight porn on DVDs that I'm just not aware of.
Well, perhaps it's just not being that marketed in Eagle Video.
I have kept my eye out on the web and so on. The only sort of significant supply of DVDs are these absurd kind of backward compatible formats like, CD video or whatever the heck it's called, that kind of old format, which is just basically the old format that you could play on your Macintosh in QuickTime or whatever. It was just the DVD format is backward compatible with this other format. I forget what it's called, CD video or something. And you can get some of those, but I haven't. There's only a small handful of titles that I've seen that are actually available natively in DVD.
But I have not explored the DVD market, certainly.
No. Corey, I'm not...
DJ International Celebrity 2000.
Sorry,
my correct
DJ
name.
International Celebrity 2000. My deepest apologies. I don't know about the gay market, but in the straight market, every big pornography producing company, everything comes out on DVD now.
This is so fun. Is there a website or a place that I can rent? Where can I rent these DVDs so I can experience them?
Most of the big... I don't know about renting. I mean, I suppose for that you'd have to go to the standard adult video arcade stores. Yeah. On the web, though, most of the big DVD online retailers have adult sections.
Really?
Interesting.
Fascinating. So you should give our listeners some URLs if you happen to know them, just because we are a public service show.
Nothing comes to mind offhand.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Wow. Fascinating. So this could open up a whole new world. I mean, maybe finally experiencing heterosexuality in its purest digital form might be the very thing that I need to finally make that transition, which has been so difficult for me in the past.
Wait, so kissing is not... I guess kissing is the purest analog form.
That's right. Some kind of multimedia encounter. Maybe if I'm watching a pornographic DVD from multiple angles while kissing one of my college girlfriends, that would be enough. So anyway, the other thing that I find sort of disappointing about pornography is this kind of distinction between obscenity and pornography. And I've noticed that the kind of porn tapes, I rent a lot of my porn via mail. I have this New York company that I can rent a tape for 30 days from them. And they have this fabulous, this huge selection. I can rent any tape I can think of. I just call them and they mail it to me.
Oh, interesting.
And so the selection is quite a bit better than I can get at sort of my local outlets. Yeah. But what I find, interestingly, is that the kinds of things that I can get from them or via mail order in general are less racy than the kinds of things that you would buy off the shelf in some store in San Francisco. I think there are certain things that fisting or enemas or water sports that it's disappointing. I think that for sort of the community standards, by the community standards principle or whatever, they just they tone it down for the sort of national market, which I find very disappointing.
So DJ 2000 2000 2000 2000, in our last 4 minutes, can you tell us what you like in pornography?
What do I like in porn? Well, okay, so I it's mostly male-to-male interaction. That probably doesn't surprise you too much.
But what any male-male interaction, or
no,
specific things that turn you on?
I guess this is kind of a complicated question. This will take some thought, but I like sort of younger-looking, sort of innocent men. A lot of porn you see involves these sort of jaded, kind of Hollywood, kind of bleach blonde surfer freaks that look like, you know, they would just as well kill you as like perform in front of the camera. And so there's a certain like the sort of jaded quality that a lot of porn actors have really turns me off. So I like when there's some like fresh new star on the porn scene who actually appears to sort of be enjoying what he's doing, porn that sort of appeals to my sort of first time fantasies, like someone who's like, mm-hmm. you know, reluctantly exposed to his own gay feelings or something like that. I like that kind of, the sort of reluctant, someone who's reluctant to engage in the sexual act but ultimately submits. That's kind of a very mm-hmm. common theme for me. It's hard to get that because it's actually hard to get any kind of plot in a porn movie, but
yes.
But also, sort of on the other side of the spectrum is any kind of degradation scenario, like prison porn, right? If someone's forced to have sex with the prison guards, you know, mm-hmm. like the guards beat them and then sort of rape them or whatever. I mean, you can't, for the same sort of obscenity reasons, you can't get things that are too hardcore like that. But there is a suggestion of sort of prison sex and domination and so on. I mean, the thing that I actually dislike about porn the most is people are all too willing to. I mean, I wish there were a little bit more of a plot, or that, you know, like even in the prison scenes, you know, the guard will say, "All right, you know, all right, prisoner, you're gonna suck my penis and you're gonna like it," and then, you know, he all too willingly like jumps on it and goes. I mean, I wish they would put up more of a fight, or you know. If the subjugation of the prisoner were acted better, it would be all the more titillating for me because the kind of submission theme is very interesting to me.
I also yearn for acting, because what I want in pornography is not so much the bodies moving back and forth, but I want to tap into people's lust, and that requires acting.
Yeah, it must be true. Since the porn industry is the purest form of capitalism, I mean, they must have tested this theory that trying to inject plots into porn and seeing whether it worked or not. I mean, if the market really wanted that, presumably it would have that.
It may be the economics of production as well. Well, that having real acting would require multiple takes and the more than half a day of production.
Right. I think that's an excellent point. I think we have to close on that point. Shota, thank you for coming from Japan. It was fascinating having you. Thank you all for listening. Please tune in again next week, and good night. Oh, this is WRCT Pittsburgh, by the way. Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to a production of WRCT Public Affairs. The opinions contained within are solely those of the participants. Questions and comments can be addressed to WRCT Pittsburgh, 5000 4th Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, or call 621-0728.